The phone book is a catalog of phone numbers, a metaphor for boredom, a booster seat, a doorstop, a punchline. Here's Steve Martin in The Jerk.
Nothing? Are you kidding? Kate, 73, Johnson, Maven, R. I'm somebody now. Millions of people look at this book every day. This is the kind of spontaneous publicity, your name in print, that makes people.
Amin Shay is author of The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Welcome to On the Media.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you previously penned a book called Reading the OED, so you have a thing for reference books?
I do, in fact, have a certain bent for reference books, I'll admit it.
Why?
I think that they're underutilized. I think we only use reference books for the ostensible purpose for which they were printed, and they can really provide us with so much more. After I published a book about reading the dictionary, I started meeting people who came up to me and confessed that they like to read the train schedule. And at first, I really thought these people are obviously lunatics. And then one of them explained to me that what he does is say he'll have a train schedule from Paris to Istanbul or something. And he's not thinking, you know, Gare du Nord at 11:37 a.m. He's remembering the last time he was in Paris. He's remembering the last time he met an old lover at the Gare du Nord or something. And so this random assemblage of numbers and digits on a page suddenly becomes this wonderful, like, Proustian way of revisiting his past or his fantasies.
There have in the past been efforts to give the phone book a bit of literary flair.
There have. And I'm sorry to say most of them have not survived. In the 1990s, a fellow in Long Island named Rodney Ryan, who prints local yellow pages there, liked poetry. And so he would stick in little bits and pieces of poems next to the categories that he thought they would match with. So there was this beautiful Emily Dickinson line, "Until the moss had reached our lips and covered up our names," about tombstones. And that went next to undertakers or something like that.
Certainly you needed to know where to find people before there were telephones, so there must have been proto phone books, right?
Well, there were directories, city directories, before there were telephone directories. And the first one dates to 1665. It was in New Amsterdam, what's obviously now New York City. But if you look at the old ones, a lot of times they're terribly incomplete. And so they'll say things like William Johnson Carpenter, and that's it. And they don't say anything else about them. They're not terribly helpful. And regular directories and telephone directories coexisted for a number of years, and eventually telephone directories replaced the need for having another directory.
Early telephone books contained instructions. Phones were relatively new at the time, and so people had to be told how to use them. You quote from the New York City Telephone Directory, 1885, "To call, press in the button and turn the crank once only. Unhook the listening telephone," that's the receiver, "and put it close to your ear when central office will inquire what number, give central office and number of person wanted, and upon receiving the answer, all right, hang up receiver, wait till bell rings."
Sometimes these instructions would go on for a full page or a page and a half. They really wanted to make sure that everybody knew how to use this. And people did have trouble with using the telephone. And there's a wonderful story in this book by a fellow named Herbert Casson, who wrote an early history of the telephone. And he describes how when they first had telephones, they set them up on a stage in New York City. People would come up on stage. They became incredibly nervous. They would shout into the receiver, "Are you there? Are you there? Are you there? Can you hear me?" Kind of how people do with cell phones sometimes. But again, nobody knew how to use this new technology intuitively, so it required a certain amount of instruction.
So in spite of the billions of phone books that have been printed over the years, they've never been treated as worth preserving.
Almost never are they treated as something worth preserving. There are a couple of notable exceptions. My personal absolute favorite is a 1958 Cuban telephone directory, I think. And it was the last book before the Cuban Revolution. And inexplicably, somebody fleeing the Cuban Revolution decided they just had to take their telephone book with them. It's the only one of its kind, I think, and is currently in the archives at the University of Miami. And it's an enormously important document. And this is one of the things that I find so delightful about the telephone book, is that it's such an unemotional, comprehensive listing. How else are you going to have a record of all the stores that were in pre-revolutionary Cuba? This telephone book now is the most comprehensive record, in some respects, of what life was like at that time.
You know, it's interesting. In this era of portability, there is nothing less portable than the phone book. Does that mean that very soon it'll be a relic?
Well, I think it's a little bit hard to say. There's a certain section of the population that is really feels very strongly about keeping the white pages. In 2009 in Ohio, when they decided that AT&T didn't want to send the white pages out to everybody, they asked for permission from the public utilities to not do this. And they were told, well, it's fine. Just you have to take out an ad in the local newspaper saying you're only going to send out a telephone book if somebody asks for one. And so many people called up frantic or furious that they might not be getting their white pages that they actually crashed the AT&T call center.
Huh. But I do sense a real generational divide, because a lot of times when producers on this show can't find somebody, I'll say, did you try the phone book?
And yeah, there is a
there's a certain element of confusion when they look at me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it used to be an expression, look me up, I'm in the book. The telephone book used to just simply be referred to as the book.
Finally, let's ponder the existential element to the phone book. It's a mysterious compendium of countless existences, including your own. The late lamented memoirist Harvey Pekar described the wonder in that in one of his American Splendor comic books. Here's Paul Giamatti performing Harvey Pekar.
1960 was the year I got my first apartment and my first phone book. Now imagine my surprise when I looked up my name and saw that in addition to me, another Harvey Pekar was listed. Then in the 70s, I noticed that a third Harvey Pekar was listed in the phone book. What were they like, I thought? Where did it come from? What do they do? What's in a name? Who is Harvey Pekar?
I guess we'll just have to look elsewhere for confirmation that we exist.
In all the time I've spent looking through telephone books, I have not yet ever come across another Ammon Shea.
Ammon Shea, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Ammon Shea is the author of The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads, just released from Peregrine Books. That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Mike Volo, Nazanin Rafsanjani, Alex Goldman, and PJ Vogt, with more help from Nerida Brownlee, Bonnie Watt, and Sarah Abdurrahman, and edited by me. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was John Delore. Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs and the head that wears the crown. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media, produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On the Media is supported by iContact, an email marketing firm based in North Carolina. Through its social responsibility program, iContact offers email marketing services to North Carolina-based nonprofits. Learn more at iContact.com/giving. Support for On the Media also comes from the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.